Create your podcast today using Anchor.
This is STEM Z Perspectives.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of STEM Z Perspectives. I'm Hazal, one of your hosts for today. My main scientific interests are physics and astronomy.
Hi everyone, I'll also be hosting today. You probably heard my voice before, as I've been in quite a few episodes recently. For those of you that are new, I'm Harry, and my main interests are in computer science and engineering.
So in today's episode, we will be talking to Dr. Clark Bray, an associate professor of the practice of mathematics at Duke University.
This episode will focus on the teaching of mathematics, how it can be done more effectively, and the difficulty of learning seemingly more abstract topics. Dr. Bray will tell us a bit about his career and what it involves being a lecturer.
So as also mentioned in our previous episode, mathematics can provide a bridge to many other subjects and can be utilized in all scientific fields, from sociology to biology to physics, and obviously economics that has a big role in that. So a basic understanding of these mathematical concepts can be quite helpful to a lot of people in life.
And now, without further ado, let's turn to our guest, Dr. Clark Bray, to discuss this more.
Welcome. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Oh, thank you. A pleasure to be here.
All right. So to start us off, do you mind telling us a bit about what you do and kind of what your work involves?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a professor of the practice at Duke, and I do a lot of teaching related to that. So past many years, I've been teaching multivariable calculus and linear algebra. These are two very foundational courses in college math curriculums, used by students in lots of different departments: natural sciences, social sciences, engineering, etc. I've been spending a lot of time developing my teaching methods. I've been using video recordings of my class. Years, even YouTube channel, things like that. I have some administrative roles around the department and around the university. I've written a course textbook, and I have a second one coming out soon. And various university committees and boards and that sort of thing.
That's cool. I feel like like throughout the pandemic, we've kind of gained a lot of insight into how people learn and like what methods are, helpful to them and what methods are actually effective. I feel like the pandemic or learning during the pandemic has been very instrumental in kind of figuring that out. And it's very interesting to see like the different ways that students have been adjusting to different methods of learning, like, you know, video lectures and like kind of a flipped classroom, so kind of like more independent methods. Yes. Which have been both very difficult but also allow for a lot more, like, I feel like it also allows for further or like a deeper understanding of different subjects, because you're able to focus on things that you enjoy and like what best works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a lot of interesting ideas that we've been, you know, thrown into the deep end on, and I'm hoping that we will keep the good and throw out the bad. Obviously, there are certain things that, you know, we don't want to keep doing, but there are certain things that, everyone's had an experience now with how to do recordings and how to interact electronically, et cetera. And I'm sure that, I think it's very likely that this will end up actually being a long-term huge benefit to how teaching is done. Yeah.
I mean, we've been having online lessons. I went back to school week beginning Monday the 8th of March, so I've been back quite a while having to do testing. Yeah. But we're getting a little bit off topic, and I'm sure we'll come back to online teaching and online learning later on in the interview. But why is mathematics important to you? Like, why would you say it like, how does it make you who you are?
Yeah, sure. That's a very good and very deep question. So I'm going to give you a couple of different answers to that. The first I'll say is, you know, I mean, some of the fundamental concepts of thought are truth and reason, right? And well, that's kind of what math is about. I mean, it's certainly a very pure approach to these things. And so, I mean, wow, what could be more fundamental and important than that? Math has, you know, is not the only field, of course, that is interested in those things, but we do have certain advantages of, you know, the objects that we deal with can be defined very precisely. They're largely because they're fundamentally very simple objects. You know, it's a lot easier to define four than it is to define justice, right? So we have these huge advantages in that way. And so we can be extremely precise. And so I feel like math is uniquely close to and has, you know, powerful access to truth and reason. So I think that's a big deal. It's a big deal for me personally anyway. There's also some aesthetic aspects of it. I think that the results in math, you know, what is math about? What does math know? It's beautiful. Beautiful in their simplicity and power of their reach. And then the arguments that we make, the kind of reasoning that we make to get to those results are, you know, also very beautiful. There's a lot of elegance in how to take a simple argument to get to a big, powerful result. So I just think it's, the aesthetics are fantastic. And then I'll now finally get around to what is probably the appeal for many other people, which is applications. I mean, math has tremendous applications in natural sciences and social sciences, medicine, engineering, tremendously strong applications in these areas. Which of course is, you know, also a big deal.
Yeah, I feel like all of those definitely have like a big role in like the importance of mathematics in people's lives. And especially applications, like, as you said, for most people, it's kind of about being able to look at different problems or like different, like the topics of different fields and analyze them mathematically, like have a framework where you can look at them in a logical way. And yeah. So based off of that, like, was this kind of a thought that you had throughout your childhood and like kind of what led you to pursue a career in mathematics?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like I always, on some level, had this point of view, and you know, certain ways developed more as I got older. I think I may have had kind of an opposite transition to, compared to maybe most people think of math initially as, oh, this is you know, got a lot of applications, and then, you know, they get into it for the applications, and then after time they realize, hey, you know, this stuff is actually kind of beautiful. But sort of the opposite for me. I started off mostly being attracted to the abstraction and the aesthetics, sort of disdaining the application as, oh, that's somebody else's problem, you know. But over time, I've come to sort of develop an appreciation of that as well. So, yeah.
And so what would you say specifically led you to become a like professor of practice of mathematics?
Yeah, right. Since an early age, I've always been interested in math. I've always been good at it. And so it seemed like a natural thing to pursue. You know, as a kid, I always sort of thought of myself, you know, going into academia. Pursued a PhD, and then when I was in the PhD program at Stanford, one of the things that, you know, all grad students have to do is teaching. And I started to realize that as much as I really enjoy, you know, research mathematics and learning, you know, creating mathematics, et cetera, I also really loved the teaching. And I came to realize that that's what I really wanted to do, was to focus on teaching. So the professor of the practice position at Duke is heavily focused on teaching. So it was sort of a perfect match for me, yeah.
Perfect match. We hear a lot of, I know we had Dr. Terence Tao, and he's very much like a research mathematician. I suppose it's really interesting. I love how you talked about the aesthetic of it. And to me, I just love seeing all the equations written out on the board and all the lines, all the symbols. And it looks really good. But how does a teaching position differ from a research position?
Not as much as one might think from the names. Research mathematicians do a lot of teaching as well. So I'd say the big difference is that positions like mine, teaching oriented positions typically don't have as much, if any, expectation of, production of new mathematics, research output. So there's a difference in focus. But research mathematicians teach, and a lot of teaching mathematicians do research as well. More teaching, more sort of focus on, innovations in teaching, perhaps. And again, everybody's different. I guess I'll also point out that, teaching oriented positions in university academia are more rare than research positions. Most faculty positions in universities are, what we typically call research positions. I think teaching positions are on the rise. There seems to be an increasing demand for a focus on, undergraduate education. And so people who are interested in focusing on that are increasingly in demand.
Yeah, I would definitely agree in that, like, the role of teaching has become more prominent in today's world. And I feel like it's, there should be more value placed on teaching, because it is really important to kind of educate, younger generations about the different topics and show them if they want to continue research, like how they may be able to do that, or give them like the tool sets to, contributing to the world and, being a good citizen, whatever that exactly means.
Absolutely.
So with all your teaching, what would you say like a day in your life involves? Would you say like both teaching and like just preparing materials for classes?
It's a lot of that. I guess a broad brushstroke way I might say it is, I spend a lot of my day thinking about math and how best to explain math. Preparing a lecture, I'm thinking about, okay, how should I say this? What order do I want to put these topics into so that the flow will kind of seem most natural to students? Then also, working with students, but there again, same thing. I'm thinking about how best to explain the ideas. So it's really very luxurious that I get to focus on that as a huge part of my day, most days. I also have some, there's some organizational aspects to my job organizing various aspects of different courses and, dealing with logistics and, students email me with a request about, turning in their homework a day late, things like this, a couple little odd jobs. And then, of course, there's also, I have a, life. I'm a dad, a husband, and a local handyman at my house, so that sort of thing.
It's great to hear you talk with some such passion, that you it feels like you really want your students to achieve the best that they can. You talked about putting everything into an order that makes it easier for them to understand, and I think that's really kind. It takes a lot of effort, and I don't think people realize how much effort teachers go to do and set work for their students.
Sure Yeah, right. Well, I appreciate the appreciation. It's something that I really do enjoy doing, and so I guess it is a lot of work, but it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a lot of teachers say. On to the next question. Sure. A large portion of mathematics can seem quite abstract. So how can these abstract topics be taught effectively to students?
Abstraction is a can be intimidating to a lot of students, and there's a take that I like to give on it, which is I like to point out to students that abstraction is not the opposite of application. A lot of students kind of see this as sort of a, you know, there's a scale and there's, you know, the very abstract over here and there's a very, you know, application or over here. And I think it's not really the right sort of model for their relationship. So let me give you just an example. So here is an abstract idea, very abstract idea, that nevertheless, students I think are very comfortable with. And that's the idea of an integer. Right? This is really very abstract. And if I say 4, y'all know what I mean. But as soon as I give some sort of a visual indication, well, this isn't 4. This is 4 fingers, right? This is a physical manifestation of an abstract idea. This elusive, where is it? I can't see it. I can't point to it. 4, right? Well, it's a very abstract concept, and yet it has lots of applications, right? In fact, I like to point out that it is the very abstractness of 4 that allows it to apply so broadly. It's literally because I didn't say 4 of what that I can then take that concept of 4 and apply it to anything. Right. So anyway, I think this was a very satisfying point of view for me, that abstractness is what allows for applications. The more abstract something is, the more broadly it applies. And so I like to think of the relationship between abstraction and application is not sort of two different sides of a spectrum, but it's more like it's two different sides of the same sheet of paper, something like that. You can't really have the one without the other, almost. So anyway, I like to focus on that, you know, to students who are like, I don't want to study this kind of math. I only want to study that kind of math. Yeah, you can't just, you know, give me one side of a sheet of paper, but don't give me the other side of the sheet of paper. You can't do that. Yeah. So that's one thing that I try to do. And of course, we also want to give students the applications, right? I mean, we can sit around and talk about 4, but eventually students want to see, you know, 4 fingers or 4 apples or something like that. So we do try to include applications when we can. I like to point out, though, that students shouldn't maybe expect to see applications every single day. If you think about it, if you're learning a very specific topic on a given day in class, an application that we would show you would have to be something that uses that material from that day, but does not use anything more advanced than that. Right? So, I mean, that's a very narrow kind of window, right? So I encourage students to, look, trust us, the applications will come.
It felt like you almost taking a philosophical stance there, saying, I've got, here's 4. How am I holding up 4 fingers?
That's right.
And that, you know, is it 4 fingers or is it the number 4?
That's right. Oh, no, absolutely. It's definitely, there's kind of a philosophical side to that. And this is the abstractness, right? I mean, can you have 4 without it being 4 of something? And it sounds very sort of, I don't know, is that Platonic maybe? I'm not sure. Philosophical sort of weirdness to the idea of abstraction, but therein lies the power. And again, you know, if you proved a bunch of theorems about 4 apples and 4 oranges and 4 pomegranates, etc., well, your theorems only apply to apples and oranges and pomegranates. If you want to apply to 4 rocks or 4 baseball bats, then you have to, or 4 of whatever other thing that I haven't thought of yet, right? You have to go into the abstract and you have to do it broadly, yeah.
So is 4 your favorite number?
I like it because in this particular discussion, it's very convenient for me to hold up 4 fingers. I don't have 16 fingers. so I like 4, sure, yeah.
So I just wanted to say that that resonated with me like quite a bit, and just like the whole concept of how the more abstract you go, the more things it can be applied to, because it is really true that like when you say, you know, this theorem works for four apples or four pomegranates, it only works for those four, like those objects and yes, not everything else. But like, I feel like with math, it's very universal and it kind of applies to basically everything. I mean, there are a lot of exceptions and certain like, cases, but I feel like it does have that very universal aspect to it. And the more philosophical you get in math, I do definitely feel like you can apply more like apply that philosophical concept to more things. So kind of branching off what you said about, you know, the complications or like the issue that some students have with the relationship between abstract and applications, what would you say like is the most challenging aspect of teaching and, you know, specifically teaching mathematics?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. For me, the biggest problem is encouraging students to come to us for help. There's a, so I don't know if it's a psychology thing or a cultural thing, but it seems very commonly the case that students feel like, well, you know, you go to office hours only if, you know, you're, something's gone wrong, you know, you need the help and, you know, you shouldn't need the help. I don't know, but something like that. And it's just not true. You know, we want students to come to office hours, even if they're doing great and they want to turn great into more great, right? I mean, come on in and let's kick it around. That's actually something that's been interesting about Zoom is it's a sort of easier doing, you know, Zoom office hours to get students to, yeah, just kind of show up. They don't even have to get out of bed. That's been interesting. But broadly speaking, though, getting the students to ask questions in class, getting students to come to office hours, getting them to kind of, you know, let's have a dialogue going so that we can figure out what it is you're having problems with so that we can correct it, fix it. Yeah, that's the big one for me. I mean, there are other challenges, lots of other challenges, of course. Another one is dealing with different levels of preparation that students come in with. Some students come in knowing more math and going into the same course as another student who doesn't know as much math. Students have different levels of interest. Students have a different focus of interest. You know, some students may be more interested in how this applies to economics. Others maybe how it applies to physics. When I'm writing a lecture or, you know, giving a discussion in class, I don't just have an audience, I have multiple audiences. And that's always a challenge.
I mean, it's so important that, you know, and this is one thing I think, you know, students can be a bit intimidated by teachers. Mm-hmm. And it's really important that if you need help, you just go and ask.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's what you're really pushing for, and what you're really putting forward is that, you know, if people need help just because it feels like office hours, you know, and there's all that pressure to say only come in if, you know, if you feel like you're at something that's gone really badly, you know, when it could literally just be, I'm unsure, you know, this question, I could submit it at 50%, but I'd love to have your help to perhaps push up to a 70 or an 80. It's little things like that. You're going to see a teacher doesn't have to be for a negative thing.
That's right. No, absolutely. And in fact, you know, I love it when a student feels like, you know, they understand almost everything and they're very confident, but they just, you know, want to put just an extra little bit of polish on their understanding of one particular idea. And, you know, we, you know, bat it around a little bit. I give them my point of view and they feel like they understand it just that little bit better. That's also wonderful, right? In other words, it doesn't have to be a, you know, a student who's really having trouble at all. Yeah.
Yeah, and so obviously you're a lecturer, but what would you recommend to anyone who wants to further their knowledge of mathematics? You know, whether it be through a course, could you watch YouTube videos, or would it just be a matter of doing it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has to find their own answer to that question. Everybody's different. I mean, my students ask me, you know, regularly, you know, how can I best learn the material in this course that they're taking from me? And even in that narrowly focused context, right? I mean, well, everybody's different. I don't know. I mean, I know when I was in college, I personally would have really loved to have, you know, video recordings of my classes. So that I could, you know, rewind. And, you know, there was that one part where the professor said something that sounded important, but I didn't understand it at the time. And being able to hear it again after I'd had a chance to go through and firm up my foundations, that would have made a huge difference for me. But some people might learn better visually, right? And they need to see it written down. So some students might get more benefit from the notes. Some more from the lectures, some more from the book. There's lots of different other kinds of resources. I'm a big believer in group work, students studying together, you know, discussing ideas. I did a lot of that when I was in college. I like to say I learned more physics in my physics classes from my classmates than I did from my instructors, in a way, because, you know, and in class, I could only digest a certain amount of it. But then outside of class, we would, you know, meet in a group and sit there for hours and kick the ideas around. And they would say something that would resonate with me. And I would, you know, give them a point of view back. And then they're just back and forth, mix it up. And, you know, good ideas bubble to the top. So everyone should try different things, be open-minded to different ways of learning. And find out what works best for you. I will say, though, that through all of it, I do think it's really important to focus on deep understanding. If students focus on getting to the number at the end of the question that they can put a box around, right? That's not the end, right? You've got to focus on what was the point to that question? Why did it work? Why was this a homework question in the first place? Right? There's an idea that I'm supposed to have taken away from this. So try to figure out and make sure you understand what that idea is. And, you know, then finally, focus on enjoying it, right? These are beautiful ideas. Find the beauty, find what's interesting about it.
Yeah, I feel like I definitely agree with everything you said about just kind of group work. Because although group projects are a dreadful thing for many students, and especially when you have some people who don't do any work and some people who do all of the work, and there can be a lot of problems with, you know, some people overworking and like other people not being responsible, and like also damaging like the mental health of the other people who are overworking because they've had to take on so many tasks. So there can be a lot of dynamics problems, but I definitely agree that like when you're in a group of people who all have different perspectives and all kind of have different ideas on something, they can, you know, when they collaborate, there can be a lot of good idea passing, and a lot of things can be gained from that sort of discussion. So I definitely think there are like a lot of benefits to group projects. Oh, for sure. And you kind of like touched on in your previously that, you know, when you're teaching to a lot of different audiences, you're teaching to a lot of different majors, people have different experiences and different understandings of mathematics. Mm-hmm. So what would be like your, like, I guess, recommended courses for like any of the listeners who are listening to this right now, or like people have, like, what would be your recommended courses to people with different interests and people with different experiences? And would you say that like it's good to take higher math classes even if someone's not in mathematics major? Like, would it help with someone who has a sociology background or someone who has a physics background, for example?
Yeah, so well, let me take that last part of the question first. You know, how much math someone should take is going to be highly personal question, different for every student. Some students have more need for math and other students have more interest in math, et cetera. But certainly I encourage students to take more math if there's any interest there at all, because it's all wonderful stuff. It's all useful and powerful in its own, each subject in its own way. Now, so for those students who are maybe not planning to go very far in math, but just, you know, want to see a little bit, I would encourage them to look for what I'm going to call non-traditional courses. Duke, for example, has a course called Math Everywhere. The idea of this course is rather than pick one subject and go deep in it, right? They have several, modern applications of, real world scenarios where math comes up. And they spend, a couple of weeks talking about this one and a couple of weeks talking about that one, et cetera. So students get to see a lot of different things and a lot of, sort of modern relevance. And so it's very appealing to a lot of students for that reason. So not every school is going to have a course exactly like that, but there will be courses, along those lines, something similar, maybe something different than just a, straight up calculus course. So those are good options, I think, for a lot of students. We also, by the way, Duke has courses called first year seminars. And these are courses that are designed kind of with this, same idea in mind of let's find something that's of particular interest that students can do with a wide variety of different backgrounds. They don't have to have specialized and that students can do, early on in their college careers. So we have some extremely interesting first year seminars in the math department. So, again, different schools are going to have different such options, but, look out for things like that. For students who are going to go on and do, higher level math courses, I think it's really important to get all the prereqs. Don't get in above your head. This can be a problem. So calculus, for example, it's really important, right? For lots of higher level courses, it's just very fundamental and basic. Linear algebra, also a wonderful foundational course that really all students planning to go higher in math really ought to take. And then once you've got the prerequisites, I have a couple of personal favorite topics. My favorite undergraduate math course that I took was algebraic topology. It's not a topic that a lot of high school students know much about, but it turns out that there are some really powerful ways to use math to understand shapes in the sense of, a bicycle tire and a donut have something in common in their shape, right? They're very different, but they also kind of, they're fundamentally, they have a, there's a hole in it, right? You know what I'm talking about. So algebraic topology is a subject where we say, okay, look, those are the same shape. So how can we make precise what it is, without saying it has a hole in it, right? Mathematically, how do we describe what it is that these shapes have in common? And then with those ideas in mind, what other kind of shapes are there and how are shapes different? Are there seven-dimensional donuts and stuff like this? So it's a beautiful subject. And then I also really enjoyed complex analysis. It's another beautiful field. It's harder to describe, but students that are planning to go up into higher fields, I think it's a beautiful choice.
That's really nice. I'm just sort of in awe by how everything links together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it is kind of amazing how that works out. And, there are connections, for example, between topology and complex analysis. Hard to see it coming, but they are there. And, it's almost the case that, you name any two subjects in math, there's probably a connection, some sort between them.
I know this happens to me sometimes, but mathematics can sometimes lead to struggle and or frustration, and if you don't understand the concept or problem, it can be devastating to some people. What Absolutely. Would you recommend doing if you ever get stuck on a math problem?
Yeah, absolutely. So, come to the instructor's office hours. Certainly, I'm always, hoping my students will come to me when they're stuck. You know, there's my office hours. There's also, you know, it depending on your course, if there's a teaching assistant, the teaching assistant might have office hours. There's other help resources. You know, Duke runs various different help resources for students. One of them, we have something called the Help Room, which is open to students in a wide variety of math classes. It's open for 40 some odd hours per week. And drop in anytime with your math question, staffed by, you know, math majors and faculty, this sort of thing. You know, seek out the help. Don't just sit there and beat your head up against a brick wall until the brick wall falls down. It's not a good strategy.
Don't suffer in silence.
That's right. That's right. This is nothing good's happening there. I'll repeat here, by the way, that, you know, this is another great opportunity to make a plug for group work. Right. I mean, so go to a friend and, you know, not with the goal in mind of give me the answer, but with the goal in mind of let's start a dialogue where we can, you know, work together and figure this out. You know, what's the approach you're thinking? And let's kind of brainstorm together and bounce ideas off each other. And who knows, something might work. Again, I did a lot of learning that way in college myself. So, don't just sit alone and, you know, alone and sad.
Yeah, I feel like definitely like, just as we've kind of talked about in this episode, it just kind of mathematics requires collaboration and it requires an exchanging of ideas. So I feel like definitely when someone's stuck on a math problem, like whenever I'm stuck on a math problem, I don't just try to attempt to solve it the same way I've attempted before or just look at the paper. I try to ask people about it and watch videos on it or like a similar topic and kind of get an opinion on it or like get an opinion about the concepts and then try to apply those concepts into a new way to solve the problem. So I feel like that's definitely
I agree. Absolutely. I mean, you know, make sure that you're using all the resources of the course, you know, rewatch that lecture video. There might be a hint somewhere in there. Talk to people, bounce ideas around. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I feel like this has been a theme throughout this whole recording. So we kind of wanted to end off with this question, but how have you been coping with, you know, online teaching and the way that learning has changed during the pandemic?
Yeah, that's right. It's been really interesting. And, you know, I'm going into this with a lot of optimism for how, you know, the experiences that we're having now are going to, keep the good and throw out the bad. Everyone's going to have learned some things about how to use technology with teaching. For example, a lot of people who have previously only taught with chalk, right, are now using tablets and Zoom and recordings, etc. Now they may not want to keep the Zoom aspect of that, but they might decide, hey, you know, working with a tablet, I can hook that up with the projector in my classroom. And now, now they're not using chalk. Now they're using a tablet and they have colors and the ability to record for student later reference and lots of nice things. So everyone's going to come to different answers to these questions, but I'm very optimistic that everyone in some way or another is going to improve their teaching as a result. I think it's been going very well for me. I like the electronic approach. I've been recording my classes for years. So in some sense, the only thing that's new for me is Zoom. I think it's been going very nicely. I've enjoyed how office hours has become so much more accessible to so many students. There are, of course, some challenges. It's very difficult to give tests. That's something I'm very much looking forward to being able to return to the classroom, keep that simpler. Student engagement, you know, there's just nothing like being right there in the room with somebody to be able to keep attention and that sort of thing. So pros and cons, but all in all, it's been an interesting adventure.
Thank you so much. You've given a real insight to us today in just such a short space of time.
It's been my pleasure. I appreciate y'all inviting me. This has been a fun conversation, and I'm glad I could participate.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. I feel like this conversation like had a lot of philosophical aspects to it, and it's just very interesting. So seriously, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Yeah, really my pleasure. Yeah, it's very interesting questions that we play with. Yeah.
In this episode, we touched on a variety of different subjects, a general one being how education, particularly mathematics education, has changed since the pandemic, and also the ways in which abstract concepts in math are learned. So in this episode, Dr. Bray highlighted the relationships between the abstract side and the application side of mathematics, and how both of them are more connected than they may seem, contrary to what a lot of students believe. So in the end, both are actually necessary in gaining a deeper understanding of mathematics. Like Dr. Bray said, when someone hands you one side of the paper, you can't just ignore the other side, you're getting both of the sides. We also talked a bit about different, like more effective ways students can learn through collaborating in group projects and going to office hours.
If you'd like to know more about the Young Scientist Journal, head to our website and social media handles, which will be linked in the description. Once again, obviously, we can't do this podcast without your help, and we'd love it if you went and bought us a coffee or perhaps took a large donation towards any aspect of the journal, something that interests you, so you can help support our videography team, you can help the print edition, which means you'll get a copy of our next journal edition. You can help our YouTube, and all the supporters, whoever's done anything, will be credited in the descriptions and at the end of the videos that we publish. So if you want to see your name up on our YouTube channel, that's what you need to do. Go to buymeacoffee.com/wisejournal and help support us. As well, this is something that's free and you can change your mind anytime. We would love it if you could subscribe to the Young Scientist Journal YouTube channel. We're trying to hit 1,000 subscribers by June, so it'd be great if you could support us.